Okay, so I'll discuss a few Rashis that I've never had the chance to talk about, and then if we have a little time, I'll talk about the most famous Rashi in Parshas Bahar, which is, of course, the first Rashi, Ma'in Shmita Eitzel Har Sinai. So if we don't get around to that, you can listen to it in Wayu Tara. So I'm now in Shishi of Bahar, Perek Chafei Pasuk Lamed Tes. Bahar talks about social fragility, social and socioeconomic fragility. People who had hard times and are forced to make adjustments in their lives. As we talked about last night, I think the second wave or the larger wave of this whole pandemic is not just going to be medical, but it's really going to hit us hard financially. So everyone's got to bear in for the long haul, as Hashem should help us and do that as well. And Parshas Bahar resonates with people who have to take measures to make adjustments, selling their land. And in some very, very difficult cases, selling themselves to be an Eved. Eved Ivri, of course. And there's a pasuk about Eved Kanani. Now, some people, the whole world of Avadim seems foreign. And of course, as it should, thank God, we live in a stage of history in which we've been able to mechanize. And mechanization has alleviated the need for large volumes of human labor. In ancient times, to build a pyramid, you needed hundreds of thousands of slaves to lug heavy stones and rocks and pyramids. Today we have cranes. Today we have computer models. Today, so humanity couldn't exist without heavy volumes of forced labor, and of course, the give and take. For humanity to prosper, you needed forced labor. Of course, forced labor can then translate to slavery and abuse, and generally, mechanization, industrialization has allowed us to pull away from the heavy labor. And still maintain a high standard of living. So, Baruch Hashem, we don't really live in a world of Avdus, not Eved Kanani, and not even Eved Ivri. It's very easy to read these sections and to move on. Nothing to see here. We don't really have Eved Ivri. We probably won't, but as Hashem, I'm looking forward to performing a lot of mitzvot when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. One of them I don't think I'm going to get to is Eved Nirtza. I don't think we're going to start piercing Eved's ears because I want to stay more than 6 years. I hope we don't. I hope we don't fall into that world of Avdus. But yet, when we learn about Avdus, certainly when we learn halachically, we want to learn about issues of Hashem's Ratzon, and those issues can be stretched to other areas. The famous Rashba in Kiddushin, Daf Tes Vav, that teaches us a lot about Isha. So certainly when you learn Eved, you're talking about personal statuses that change. And when you're learning the Parsha, aside from the halachic encounter, you also want to talk about what parts of our lives are close to Eved. Do we come into contact with people that aren't really Avadim? But if we read the Parsha carefully, we'll be able to treat them in the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expected us 2,000 years ago to treat Avadim. That's what we're trying to skunk out from Rashi. We're trying to tease out from Rashi. Hopefully you'll never come into contact with an Eved. I wish that bracha on all of us. But you do come into contact with people in whom you are positioned in a hierarchical relationship. And in many, many cases, I hope you'll be successful in life and successful professionally. That hierarchical relationship will mean that you have that person serving you, either materially. So, for example, we live in a world of service providers. That's going to make this economic rehabilitation so difficult because in the days of FDR, telling my kids about the Great Depression, so FDR just threw hundreds of thousands of workers into public works, go dig tunnels and go build trains and roads. But now, more of a service-based economy. So there are certain services provided to us that are white-collar services that take a tremendous amount of skill that we don't have and that protect our bodies, like doctors, or protect our legal and financial interests, like stock investors and lawyers. And then there's service providers that are much more blue-collar. And chas v'shalom, they're closer to avodah, but sometimes you don't feel, because they don't possess a skill that took them hundreds of years, because they don't possess a title. Sometimes when people are service providers, people feel a little bit superior to them and treat them inappropriately. People that are in the food industry, waiters, waitresses, busboys, the cleaning, home services, transportation services, cabs, taxi drivers, luggage handlers. So a lot of our ability to maintain the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he outlines in Parshas Bahar can be then exported to when we find ourselves in those hierarchical relations, then they're not just the economic ones, but also the emotional ones, where our children, our talmidim, and people that are when we're boss and we have people working for us. So let's try to take a look at some of the Rashis and see some of the attitudes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of us with Avadim, and then we can package that whole experience and segue over to our lives. So the first pasuk I want to read, the first Rashi, is a very interesting Rashi in pasuk Mem Beis. The Torah has already told us that the Torah will tell us lo tirda bo b'farach. This is in pasuk Mem Gimel. You can't work him too hard. We'll see what that means in Rashi also. In the pasuk before, lo yimachru min keres aved. So what does it mean? He shouldn't be sold as a slave. What do you mean? He is sold as a slave. Once he's your slave, you can't overwork him. You can't burden him. But it sounds as if there's a process by how he's sold. So Rashi comments, Mahraza, you can't sell him on the market by announcing, here's a slave, come buy him. You can't make those announcements. Yesh Eved Limkar, come buy a slave. I'm reading Rashi. Lo Yami Denol Evan Halekach. Well, okay, you shouldn't put him into the at a large stone or a large stage where they would put their wares for sale and where they would sell Eved Kanani, and you can't treat another Jew, we're talking about an Eved Ivri, in that manner. So even before he does a stitch of work for you, even before he does anything, there's a dignity and a respect and a lack of dehumanization and a lack of objectification that you have to display to this person, even though he's your slave, an Eved Ivri, of course. So that's something that has to translate into our experiences, that and our interactions, our body language. I sometimes see people just acting rudely to people that they don't feel they have to respect. I know that when a cab driver picks me up, I feel very uncomfortable. He takes my luggage and I lug it with him, right? I try to prevent him from lugging it. I remember it was back maybe 20 years ago, we were building the house that I'm now sitting in. And the Arab workers, I got friendly with many of them, and Palestinian workers. And I picked up a few of the workers in a car, or someone picked me up in their car with another worker. And the electrician, whose name I still remember, I've spoken to him since, the electrician was waiting with me to get into the car. The car pulled up, and he got into the back seat, expecting me to sit in the front seat. He was a little bit my elder, about 10 years, not that much older than me. I refused to say, you're older than me. And he was just shocked, because he just assumed that since I'm the Jewish settler and I'm paying his salary, that he would sit in the back and lug his bit. I said, no, you're a father, you're a grandfather. And I tried to show him the dignity. So when you have people serving you, I don't mean the word serving in an Eved manner, but providing services, and especially those services are not white collar services, but blue collar services and less than the services that people take for granted, don't feel innately the same type of respect for, then it's important not to get caught into hierarchy and making someone feel less. If anything, I think it's important to compensate, try to make that person feel better about himself and more equal in the relationship, rather than just slide into, I'm sitting here, there's a word that I feel very uncomfortable with. I don't know what English, but like when they come to your house, say, who's the Balabite? And they call you Balabite. And now they call me my first name, Moshe, right? So if someone comes to your house, try to create a personal interaction with that person. So that's the pasuk. Lo yimachru min keres aved. No one's ever going to sell someone as the slave. So you're not going to violate the letter of this halacha. But I think you're showing dignity to a person rather than dehumanizing or worse, objectification of a human being. The next Rashi is the one I talked about before in Pasuk Mem Gimel. Lo tirda bo b'farech v'reisa me'lohecha. So you shouldn't overwork him. So you're dealing with overworking, too much of a burden, too much weight, too many hours, too taxing, which is true. But Rashi interprets lo sir debo b'farech melacha shelo letzorech. Don't just give him busy work, namely idei lanoso, just to torture him. Al tomar lem hachim leis akosa zeh, just heat up this water for me. He doesn't really need the water. Ador tachas agefen achava, just work on this grapevine until I come. So it's needless work, and in the context of Rashi, needless work has no purpose, has no objective, has no benefit for the master. He's just doing it to torture him. Okay, so now let's try to export this to our world. You're not going to have avadim. You're not going to need this work. So what part of our lives does this relate to? I think sometimes, well, what's that adon? Why is he giving him needless work. What's the point? Just to punish him and torture him? I don't think it's just torture, not a, I always get confused, a masochist or a sadist. I don't want to, not sadist, I don't want to torture someone. It's you want to reinforce your position. So when I get you to do something for me that's completely needless, I'm reinforcing the fact that you follow my commands. And in fact, those of you who have the schus to serve in Sal, you'll see that a large part of your tironot is empty work and empty fulfilling of commands because they're trying to build the trait of discipline. That what your commander says is goal, is the law, and you don't question, you just jump. And he says, you say, how high? So there you have to establish the profile of your authority. But in relationships in life, and here I'm borrowing from Evid to relationships, sometimes we stand on our positions and we're obstinate, not for substantive reasons, but because we just can't give in because of our, we're afraid to step out of our role. I'll give you just a perfect example this week. I'm not going to be too specific. So you call one of my children up. One of my other children wanted to do something. And believe me, it's very taxing time as parents because I have to make dozens of decisions per week that I don't have any guidebooks for because I'm all flying blind. And we're overtaxed. Just today, I was happy to have a chance to sit and learn it because every 2 minutes someone needs something else for me. So like I'm going out of my mind, to be honest. And you're trying your hardest to keep it together. And I took a position and I was unable to sway him. And then I was opposed to something he wanted to do. And then I thought about it more and I said, well, I really have to give him this because he needs it. And then it was hard for me to step away from my original position as a father because I wanted to teach him a lesson, but I thought he needed whatever his request was more. But without getting too specific, so I had to shift in midstream. I had to walk away from my position because substantively, my son needed this. Substantively, he needed me to allow this for him, even though I thought he was making a larger error, but I think in the smallest sense, he needed it. And first of all, I was the father, and he's not listening. That was no longer relevant. So in every part of our relationship, when it comes into interactions with other people, we have to show compromises and decisions. And sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we're flexible, and sometimes we're rigid. But try to make the decisions substantive rather than protecting or posturing or trying to make decisions based on how you'll be seen. It's a really important part of work and collaboration. And I think a lot of the decisions we reach in Yeshiva, I know as a staff, one of the things I'm proudest about is, I can't say all of them, but like 99% of our decisions are substantive. It's rarely about how it's going to be seen and who's going to give the shiur and which Rebbe needs it. Oh, what's best for you? We may render the right decisions, maybe the wrong decisions, but it's all substantive. And that's what I get from this Rashi, that don't tell him to perform needless work. If it's substantive, he can work. If not, then whether it's sadistic, you just want to torture him, or to want to reinforce your positioning, and don't do that at another person's expense. Okay, the next Rashi is as follows. Interesting Rashi. Let me see if I can find it. It's a contrast Rashi. Pasuk Mem Vav is already describing an Eved Kanani. As far as an Eved Kanani is concerned, him you can work, or her you can work, and they're your chattel, at least in those days. V'istachaltem ozlam l'vnechem acharechem v'yol ben tavotu. Stop, but not for the Jews. So the parsha ends, not the parsha, but the Samach parsha, the small parsha, ends with, however you treat Eved Kanani, don't bring that same treatment over to Jews. So what does Rashi say? What does it mean, lo tir debo b'farach? We've already learned that you can't work your Eved Ivri that way. Rashi says, the end of this pasuk is not referring to an Eved Ivri. It's referring to other people in Jewish society that have authority over other Jews. Namely, Rashi, Lahavi Nasi Be'amo, a melech who does have the authority to coerce or to compel, has to be careful, shouldn't be Befarech. Melech B'Misharsav, a king with his servants, Shelo Lirdos Befarech. So now there's expansion from an Adal and an Eved. The people that have even greater rights or more surpassing rights and authority than an Adam and his Eved, a Melech and the Misharasim, or a Melech and his subjects. So now it's not just about positioning, because the Melech doesn't have to position himself or any hierarchy, as the Adam may have to reinforce his Adam stakes. Melech's a Melech. It's not going to make a difference what the Mishari says. It's about something deeper. To get to that deeper level, to look back at the Pasuk. To look back at that Pasuk, at the end of the Pasuk, there are two words, or one word that's repeated twice, that dominates the Pasuk. Uvi'achechem b'nei Yisrael ish bi'achiv, lo tirdabo b'farach. Uvi'achechem b'nei Yisrael ish bi'achiv, lo tirdabo b'farach. And now there's a shift. Everything I've said until now is about leading a good moral life. How you treat others. It's not Jewish. It's human. How can you be a better human being? Don't disparage people. Don't disrespect them. Don't objectify them. Don't dehumanize them. Don't try to posture at their expense. But part of how we treat other people is that we have a common heritage and that we're brothers and Achenu Beis Yisrael and Achachem Bede Yisrael. And the Melech and the Nasi have to feel that even more deeply because they're committed to leading. One of the great words that's completely misunderstood in today's world is leadership. Leadership does not mean people are looking at you, and leadership does not mean that you're on the front of a flyer, and leadership doesn't mean, leadership just means that you bear responsibility for something larger than yourself, and you're happy to carry that responsibility. So the Melech has to feel a national ethos, a national concern, and that's why his specific warning is described as Uve'achechem b'nei Yisrael ish bi'achiv. In terms of our ability to treat other people, now the focus is narrowing a little bit. It's not just morally not to be abusive and not to be exploitative and not to be disrespectful, but to have a sense that we're brothers and we come from the same stock and we share the same fate, we share the same destiny. I think that's, someone once asked me two questions that have the same answer. They were asked by two different people. One question was, what's so great about living in Israel? And the other question was, and maybe they have the same answer, what's so challenging about living in Eretz Israel for people that want to make Aliyah? Especially a rabbi answered me that question. Asked me that question. And the same answer is, because when you're in shul and you're sitting next to the plumber and the bus driver and the electrician and the grocery man and the gardener, and you're just the rav, there's really no difference. You're all just the same because there's this overall cloak of we're all Jewish and we're all sending our kids to the army and we're all struggling to build. There's something larger that we're so committed to that our professional profiles tend to wilt away and tend to dissipate. So it's not like, oh, he's a doctor and he's a lawyer and he's a rabbi and he's a... It's more just everyone feels very similar. And that's what's great about Israel. And sometimes that's what's very difficult about making Aliyah, because you really have to check your ego in Ben-Gurion. When you're in the airport, you have to check your ego because no one really cares about your profession. And I speak to a lot of rabbis, and that's when I count them. So if you're the rabbi of a community in America, a lot of people look to you, and there's a certain profile. Some people let it get to their personality, some people wear it well. But here, it really doesn't exist. Even if you are a rabbi, if you are a teacher, you're just a normal, average person. So the fact that there is a sense of brotherhood and fraternity in Ariel, that's something that Michael talked about last night in Israel. I think that gives a different tone to how we treat other people. The final Rashi about this issue turns our treatment and respect for other people from a moral question, first issue, do you abusive, respectful, to a national question, uvachechem ish bi'achiv, to a theological issue. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us a little bit earlier on, Mem Beis, and going back a few psukim, ki avadai heim, asher hotzeisi osam eretz Mitzrayim, lo yimachum im keres aved. So there's a lot of halachos that are derived from avadai heim, but Rashi says, shtarei kodem, I come first. Now, you can't just read Rashi literally, I come first. Sounds like Hashem's the bully on the block. You can't abuse that because I already got dibs on that. There's something larger to that. And of course, it's not that Hashem is demanding his rights. Oh, they're my avadim, how dare you take them. It's how the potential abuser or the potential disrespecter sees. If you see a person as an Obed Hashem, so first of all, if you're an Obed Hashem, you don't want to steal that person's resources inappropriately for yourself, that person's material resources, psychological resources. If you're in it for Avodas Hashem and that person's in it for Avodas Hashem, you can't be abusive or disrespectful of that person, because then you're not contributing to the larger calculus of Avodas Hashem. It's just about your Avodas Hashem. It's about a larger calculus. So if you're an Ebed, then it's really not about you. It's about the Rabbonu Shalom. And about the Rabbonu Shalom, then there are other Avodim. So it's a theological hold on mistreating people because, and again, not just Avodim, but in our day-to-day interaction, when if you're a real Oved Hashem, then it has to bleed into how you treat other people that are Oved Hashem. And obviously, it has to bleed into how you treat everyone, even not Oved Hashem, and every Jew, even not Oved Hashem, but certainly there's a certain feeling of camaraderie and partnership that you feel with other Oved Hashem if you're really honest about it. That's part of it. And part of it is just if a person is Oved Hashem and they're affiliated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person affiliated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to be a little more careful and respectful about it. Not just because that person's an Oved Hashem and your interest is their interest, their interest is your interest, you want to advance the presence of Hashem in this world, but you also feel there's an affiliation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you want to respect. Even let's say you weren't an Oved Hashem, let's for a minute imagine, or but that person is affiliated with Oved Hashem. So in terms of treating people with respect, I think there are three layers described in this week's parsha. The first layer is moral. Don't objectify, don't dehumanize, don't posture at another person's expense just to reinforce your own positioning. Second is, uvachachem b'nei Yisrael, lotir debav, uvachachem etzlashen, uvachachem b'nei Yisrael, ish b'yachir, lotir debafarach. Make sure that you have that sense of we're all children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're all brothers, we're living Yesh Nochalim now, when you go into Yesh Nochalim, Shei Yesh Yisach, and there's a national element. The Rambam, when he describes Tzaka, in the beginning of Hilchos Matnas Aniyim in Parakut, really stresses that we're all brothers, and if one brother doesn't have Rachmanas with another brother, then who will? And the third is a theological element, Ki Avadayim, V'lo Avadim, Le'avadim. Okay, I don't want to take more of your time because I know that Seder is supposed to start at 9:15, so we'll save the first, well, just a quick 2 minute, the first Rashi. Can't be anything more famous than the first Rashi, Ma'in Shemitah, Eitzel Har Sinai. Why is Har Sinai mentioned here? And the overall message, there are a lot of sub-messages to this, but the overall message, which Rashi quotes, why is Har Sinai mentioned regarding Shemitah? Shemitah has a lot of details. Avos, Talados, Tosefes, Shvius, which is going to many, is Deraisa. It's just like Shemitah, all the details. Kloloseh, Kratoseh, Nedikdukeh, we're given in Har Sinai. Now, how do we know that we're given in Har Sinai? Because the Parsha really isn't mentioned again in Devarim. It's one of the only mitzvahs. Doesn't get that much mention. It's mentioned in Shpatim, but it's not really mentioned. It's not mentioned again. So evidently, everything was given in Har Sinai. Similarly, all the mitzvahs, everything was given in Har Sinai. That's why the word Har Sinai is inserted into the beginning of Parshas Behar, right before the laws of Shemitah Yovel, and hence the parsha is named Behar because it's prefaced with Har Sinai. And there's really a lot to talk about. Why was Shemitah chosen? Maybe just mention 10 seconds of that. Why is it chosen here? The overall message is that religion does trickle down to details, and Avodas Hashem is not just about spectacularly large ideas of faith and theology, but Avodas Hashem is both, and it braces human experience because the high and the common, it's very large ideas about life, and it's common daily interaction and daily anchoring. And most religions don't really have that anchoring. Most religions are just about high-minded ideas about life and morality and God and religion. And then it just becomes almost a neutered set of ideas that loses all correspondence to reality. And what makes Yiddishkeit so compelling is that we have to act carefully in accordance with halacha through every phase of human experience. It really infiltrates every moment of human experience. And not only that, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinity radiates through every detail. So, yes, it's not just that Shabbos is the day Hashem rested, and I want to rest to try to identify with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but at some level, if I peel a potato, lay alter, without using a kli miyuchad lekach, and I do ochel mitoch psoles in the right way, as strange as that sounds, that's a kiyum of Ratzon Hashem in a way that altering one of those details would not, in a way that the human eye can't trace. So details are really important. I think a lot of people that are broad thinkers, I think a lot of boys in our yeshiva tend to be broad thinkers, sometimes have a harder time with the details. And generally, like, we have people that are dichotomies, or people that are very, very detail-oriented, and they follow halacha, and they know exactly what the Shmir Shabbos is. And you ask them about the broader issues of religion, it's harder for them to connect those levels. And you have broad people, just think about the rabbin, you know, in life. You have people that are very highly refined post-skim, and then the broader issues are not really their menu, their diet. And you have people very, very large and broad scaled, and you ask them a shaylah, you ask them about a tosus and ksuvas, it's harder for them to dig in. It's not just the intellectual skills, but it's also the orientation. And how can you become someone who's both? Bukhazim is really, to us, is really the paradigm of both. And how could you, in your own way, become a little bit of each and have deep, deep respect and awe for details? And that's why Shemitah is chosen, because there are very few mitzvahs that are as broad and understandable and as central as Shemitah. You can enumerate 7 or 8 reasons. It all makes sense to you. Re-nutrifying the land, the sabbatical for spiritual pursuits, reaffirming the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu and the ownership of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, social distribution. I mean, Shemitah makes sense to us. It speaks to us at so many levels, as Shabbos does. And it's specifically there where the ideas are so grand and so global and so understandable that you may ignore the details. So, for example, Paraduma, no one's going to ignore the details because you know it's all magic. I mean, magic in the disparaging way, but it's beyond the human ability to comprehend. So I don't really understand Paraduma, so I really better be careful not to short-circuit the ceremony because I don't really know what I'm doing. So I better follow regulations. But when I know what I'm doing, sometimes there's a tendency to say, look, and let me give you an example. Let's say a person woke up in 2020 and said, well, I fully buy into Shemitah. So this year, I'm not going to work as a lawyer, not going to work as an investment manager. I'm just going to spend my year planting a garden. I'll be a farmer. It's a great way to take a spiritual break and to capture the spirit of Shemitah. So you could violate every single Isser D'Oraisa and D'Rabbanan, but in his or her mind, they're locking into the spirit of Shemitah because Shemitah is here to take off. And what better way to take off than this? Spend your year on a farm. So it's because Shemitah is so palatable and so decipherable that HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to choose it and single it out and say, well, Shemitah, the details were all given in Har Sinai. Details are important. You can extrapolate from this to other mitzvahs, but details are important. It's a short summary because it's just important. Rashi, I just want to make sure you don't just run over. Okay, regards from my bedroom. But Mirza Hashem, we'll meet you back downstairs next time. If you want. Say good Shabbos to everyone.
Shabbos.
Ariel. How are you? Good Shabbos. Shabbos. Good Shabbos.
Thank you so much.
Anything exciting happening for anyone this Shabbos? It's all just...
As no. Exciting as... I mean, it's Shabbos. That's the exciting part.
Yeah?
That is the exciting part.
And the weather looks good. It seems like the sun's out. So we're in the sun also.
Baruch Hashem, yeah. Yeah. It snowed last Shabbos. It snowed in New York last Shabbos, yeah.
Boston also, yeah?
A little bit, not so much. Like, you had to wake up all late to see it. Yeah, it was strange.
Yeah, nothing like a May snow. That's the saying. April showers bring May snow.
The May snow and the murder hornets, you guys better be careful over there.
Hopefully those don't get us before we get back to Israel. But yeah.
Yeah.
I'm back for
a while to fly.
Israel's a place to be, trust me on that one.